ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So what's Australia given the world? How about Tim Tams, polymer banknotes, and a very specific electoral system?
We've got compulsory voting,
preferential voting,
the secret ballot, the democracy sausage.
I'm Annabelle Crabb. Join me for the rollicking backstory of our democratic dreamers and how our electoral system works today. It's called Annabelle Crabb's Civic Duty, and you can stream all the episodes now on ABC iView.
Chaz, welcome back.
Hello.
Good to have you back in the chair again, but I need to warn you about something straight up probably, and there is a good chance I will ruin this podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because as a headline asked in the New York Times, do women ruin the workplace?
Oh.
Given a chance, it's what every little girl dreams of.
I stand warned.
By the time you're 30, just ruin a couple of workplaces. Yeah. But what I really want to know from you is how we can get to the point where we are seriously posing that question in 2025. All right, this is Not Stupid. I'm Julia Baird.
I'm Chaz Licciadello.
And this is being recorded on Gadigal land. And this is a podcast where we talk about the news of the week, the things that's popping up in your feed, the things that perplex and confuse you, like are women ruining the workplace? But we also want to talk about what's happening at the BBC. Trump's threatening to sue for $1 billion. We've had a couple of high-level resignations, and a lot of people are asking, what will this actually mean for journalism, for people trying to get it right, for people trying to get straight in a world of misinformation and disinformation? Okay, Chaz, I think we need to explain to people why we want to talk about the premise of whether or not women are ruining the workforce. So this was a headline in the New York Times, and which was later changed, by the way, after I assume what was substantial complaint to, has liberal feminism been ruining the workforce?
Okay.
And it was there was a podcast with Ross Douthat, and he was interviewing two women. One of them was Leah Labresco Sargent, who has written about the whether or not the essential nature of women is being stifled by male institutions, and is that creating a problem? And the other woman was Helen Andrews, who you know well. You used to have her on the Planet America. I used to have her on the Drum because she spent some time in Sydney. She's a conservative, but she's garnered a lot of attention lately.
Yes.
For her thesis, which has been delivered in a speech and which is viewed more than 100,000 times, and also an essay, in which she poses this question. I want to get this, try to get this as right as I can. And it is, has the feminization of the workforce or several workforces over a period of time, and by that she means not the entry of women, but the point at which women are more than half or affect the culture.
Yes.
Has the feminization of the workforce led to what she calls wokeism, and which she thinks leads to more female traits of empathy, consensus building, and will be therefore less effective.
Mm.
That's essentially fair to her thesis, isn't it? And she believes this could be catastrophic.
Yeah, and let's just emphasise, she's not saying all women are X.
That's right.
But she's saying when women take over as a group,
yes,
it tends to affect the group in these negative ways. It promotes shunning and wokeism and cancellation.
Yes, yes, cancellation, exactly. So what she's said, I'm just reading from her essay here, cancel culture is simply what women do when there are enough of them in a given organisation or field. That is the great feminisation thesis. Everything you think of as wokeness is just a result of more women. She said that's... thinking about that thesis was incredible and unlocked the whole all the secrets of the era we're living in. She said, wokeness is not a new ideology or an outgrowth of Marxism or a result of post-Obama disillusionment. It is simply feminine patterns of behaviour applied to institutions where women were few in number until recently.
Okay.
Chaz.
Right. Now, I've got a few thoughts about this. Jump in whenever you want, but I could go forever.
Yeah, good, good.
First of all,
yeah,
I think what she is saying is historically, objectively wrong. Let me explain. She's saying that the teens were the period where there was a tipping point for particularly in the law, she said, is when you start to have a majority of legal firm partners being women,
yes.
She says, mm-hmm. in America at least. Mm-hmm. Of course, these trends are across the world, and the world has moved at different rates in different countries.
Yeah.
But let's leave that aside. Wokeness was everywhere 10 years ago in all businesses.
Define wokeness for me.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the idea of
diversity matters.
Elevating minorities and shunning people who do not prioritize diversity. I'd say I'd say that's a fair definition of wokeness.
Shunning. Yep.
Yeah,
okay.
And I would say that was preeminent about 10 years ago, and in all. It was across society. It wasn't just in law firms in America. It was across society. Mm-hmm. Were all CEOs and boards of directors women mm-hmm. 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. I don't think they were. I think pretty far from it, actually.
But doesn't she say mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, even if men are running the place, if women are influencing it, for example, in the HR department?
Okay. All right. Fine. All right. Let's take that.
Okay.
Let's take some organizations or some jobs that women completely dominated long before 10 years ago. Nursing. Was nursing really woke in the 70s and 60s and 50s when they were basically 100% women? I don't think it was. What about gossip magazines, which from the beginning have been targeted specifically at women? Mm. Are they woke? Are they into cancellation? I'd say the opposite. Mm. I'd say gossip magazines celebrate bad boys and they actually elevate them.
Mm. Tabloids generally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, what about the rest of society? Because cancellation is not driven by a law firm. It's driven by the populace. Mm. Like cancellation is cancelled by society. Mm. Women have been the majority of society for a very long time. They've been the majority of consumers for decades and decades, if not centuries. Cancellation just popped up in the teens. Mm. So what's that? So I would say that is historically wrong, what she said for that reason.
Mm, she'll be saying, yeah. though, that let's look at the Me Too movement.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
I'll quote her about the Me Too uh-huh. movement. She cites Christine Blasey Ford, who was the accuser of Brett Kavanaugh, Supreme Court Justice, back in about 2018, 2019,
right, yep.
something like that.
Yep.
She accused him of sexually assaulting her.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, this is what Hal Andrews says, the masculine position was that if Christine Blasey Ford can't provide any concrete evidence that she and Kavanaugh were ever in the same room together, her accusations of rape cannot be allowed to ruin his life. The feminine position was that her self-evident emotional response was itself a kind of credibility that the Senate committee must respect. And so she was saying the reason why it was so controversial was because, and it was so evenly balanced, was because the feminization of society at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue that was because Me Too and Believe Women were movements that were faddish at that point in time. What's happened since then, Julia? Would you say people are taking sexual assault as seriously now as they were 6 years ago?
Well, there are two there are two men on the Supreme Court who have been accused of sexual assault. There is a man in the White House who was found to have sexually abused a woman.
That's right. Andrew Cuomo just got 42% of the vote in New York mm-hmm. when he is credibly accused and had to resign over sexual assault allegations. No one cared. He almost won in New York of all places. You would say that's the wokest place in the world. I would say that people aren't taking sexual assault as seriously now as they were 6 years ago.
Well, but the reason we were talking about it 6 years ago is because of the low levels of conviction of perpetrators,
sure.
the low levels of reporting, harassment and disbelief of women. And I think that's one thing that is not translated about Me Too, and which Helen Andrews says as well. Like everyone's talking about, you've got to believe women. This doesn't mean that anytime someone comes up with an allegation, you just throw someone in jail. It means that you don't automatically disbelieve them, discredit them, vilify them, which has happened to women for centuries, at every stage of the judicial process.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is whatever state we were in 7 years
worse.
Ago, it's gotten yeah, worse.
I agree.
But there are more women now. It's not like the women disappeared. If anything, the trends of feminization have increased in the last 6 years, mm-hmm. but the symptoms that she describes have gone the other way.
Yeah.
If she's right that the more women you have, the more feminized society becomes,
yeah.
theoretically then, what should happen is over time, society should have become gradually more woke, right? So that directly before the teens.
And she also says more empathetic,
yeah,
more consensus
absolutely.
Building. Yes.
Let me remind you of where we were 10 years before this woke period.
Yeah.
We were in the least woke period in pop culture history. The noughts was the period of There's Something About Miriam. Do you remember that? That was the Bachelor show.
Oh my goodness,
yes. Bachelor show
where
where at the very end they revealed that the woman was actually a transgender woman.
Yeah.
That's not very woke.
Yeah.
This was the period of the reverse Kanga on Big Brother, where guys were sitting backwards on toilets to create skid marks in the girls' toilets. Does that sound woke to you? You couldn't.
I missed that, Harley. it doesn't sound woke.
I'm not surprised that you missed that.
Yeah.
But my point is that the noughts were a period of anything goes.
Yeah.
They were so much less woke than the 90s or the 80s before it.
Mm.
These things go in cycles. It's political. It's socio-political. And if anything, the woke era was a backlash from what came directly before it.
But it's also about race. I mean, that's the origin of the term awake, is to suddenly be aware of racial
that's
oppression
true.
In a culture. And now it's been somehow changed into annoying things women do when they get together and want to say, hey, don't sexually assault me. Damn, you're ruining the workplace again.
you're absolutely right. And can I also just make one other point on the historical trends?
Please.
And that is that what happened after woke? What happened now?
Yeah.
Trumpism. The end of DEI.
Yeah.
Have the women disappeared? No, they haven't. They're still there. Mm. The only thing that's changed is the president. That's the only thing that's changed, and just general trends in society. So I think historically, you look at her argument, and it doesn't reflect reality. And that's even before I get to first principles of why her argument doesn't make sense.
Let's come back to the first principles thing, because I want to talk about the idea of, what on a granular level, why women talking about behaving decently and not harassing and whatever it seemed to ruin a workplace.
Yeah.
Can we just step back for a moment? The reason we're talking about this is not because it's some outlandish, outlying. I mean, people say offensive things all the time,
yeah,
right? And you don't generally want to waste your time like jumping on it and thinking, why is this so illogical and why are people talking about it?
Mm.
Why are people dividing instead of uniting and all the rest of it? The reason that we're talking about it is because this has hit a nerve and because so many people are speaking about it, because we're in an era of the MAGA movement where the ways in which women are being spoken about are increasingly insulting. The idea of women not actually voting, I'm seeing in my feeds on most days.
Incredibly. I can't believe it.
Not
true.
Voting.
Yeah.
I was reading something from a Presbyterian pastor yesterday who was saying, this is a biblical thing. The moment you said that women could vote, you ruin the headship of the husband. So we're seeing this in astonishing things. So at first we were like worried about, a president who has been derogatory towards women for the way they look, who was running a Miss Universe pageant, who, is still in lockstep with the legal system about the E. Jean Carroll case. But actually there is something broader going on, which is challenging the right of women to have a public voice or public existence, which is saying that there's the tradwife thing, that we should be returning to a home, and that the reason things are out of kilter is because of women.
I think you're absolutely right that there is a reason why we are talking about this.
Yeah.
It's because it is saying to a certain group what they want to hear.
Yes.
And I don't think that group is women. And by the way, these trends that you're talking about, the people feeling no problems with just piping up about, women shouldn't be able to vote.
Yeah.
That's not restricted to gender. That's or sex. That's about That's about race as well.
Yes.
Like Vivek Ramaswamy, who is a Indian conservative in America, who was running for governor in Ohio, he put up a picture 2 weeks ago, Halloween picture of him and his family. No political statements, just happy Halloween and this photo. If you look at the comments underneath it, it's almost exclusively go back where you came from. Shouldn't the kids be studying? Did they get poop for trick or treat? Just pure unadulterated racism. Oh. And I'm talking hundreds of comments. Now, if you went back 10 years ago or 15 years ago on Twitter, you never would have seen that. Never. But these people, not only do they think this stuff, but they feel fine about publicly advertising
emboldened.
Those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and it is a really, really concerning aspect of this era, which makes this whole Helen Andrews piece feel like an anachronism from 10 years ago.
It really does.
Yeah, we've moved way past this now.
To so boldly state women are going to ruin things and we need to strip them out, you know, of workplace cultures before we get to, I don't know, empathetic.
Yeah, the Times have taken care of that for her. They've stripped out any influence that women may have had in the last 4 or 5 years with this insanity, this extreme discriminatory acceptance. And I don't know why that. I mean, that's not just Trump. That I feel like Trump has been riding off the back of it rather than the other way around.
Yeah. The question is what that is and where that's from. Is this backlash about Me Too?
That's got to be part of it. Like, there's got to be some backlash element. The joy and the anger with which these people exhibit these thoughts reek of backlash from something.
Mm. So, tell me about your other objections in terms of the workforce, because what she does is in quite a spectacular way, which I think, you know, can be insulting to men in some ways, is talk about stereotypes. But she's very clear on what men's virtues are and men's vices.
Yes.
So the virtues are the ability to take criticism, just kind of like, you know, men are apparently used to being in hierarchies. And
you fight and then you move on. Like a war.
You're a warrior.
You fight a war and then you
make peace. And women are the warriors.
Yeah.
So worry more about things. Yeah. And she says that for men, what did she describe their vices as? It was
aggressive.
Aggressive.
Aggressive. Competitive can be positive or negative depending on the circumstance. She very much had a view of men being angry and loud, but then they move on and then they make peace. And then
the women, she said, they're gossipy and they just work to undermine. She tells an example about Barry Weiss, who was at the New York Times, now is running basically CBS. And she and the Free Press asking a female colleague out to lunch, and this female colleague out to coffee, and this colleague refusing. And she said that's very much feminine. That's the way women operate, apparently.
Yeah.
But what she was challenged about on this podcast is she couldn't name female virtues, what she liked about women.
Yeah. I'd take personal offense at any talk of inherent traits, because invariably, whenever I read about inherent traits of women, they're describing me.
So, tell me, like what?
Like when I read about people who multitask, people who are talked over and ignored, people who are quiet, and people who
listen.
And they are empathetic, and they sort of
consider different points of view.
Yeah, and they concede to other people, and they just like that. All that is me, right? It's always been me, and I just don't think it's feminine. I think it's just
people.
A mindset. Like, some people have it, and some people don't. It's got nothing to do with sex.
Mm.
I mean, look, I'm not saying that there is nothing that is different between men and women, right? I'm not saying, more boys don't play with trucks or whatever.
Even though,
by the way, my daughter was really into trains.
Yeah.
And the pink blue thing, just a little aside, it used to be the opposite way around.
I know. Victorian England. The boys wearing the pink little dresses.
I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is that whatever inherent traits there are out there, they change over time. They change in context. And I'll give a classic example that we've all lived through.
Yeah.
Involving sex as well. Young men.
Yep.
You look at young men now in terms of cliches.
Yep.
You look at young men 30 years ago. It used to be that the male cliche was a strong, silent type. Mm. And, you know, they just got on with it. They didn't whinge.
Yes,
they didn't complain. Now, young men are just constantly belly aching and snowflaking. And I'm not talking about the left. I'm talking about the right. I'm talking about across the board. All I hear about are the problems facing young men. Oh, poor young men. And you go, 30 years ago, you wouldn't have heard that.
You like bring back stoicism.
I'm not, look, I myself don't like whinging, but having said that, I'm not trying to force my particular personality on other people. Mm. That's not my personality. I described before.
But isn't it also good? I mean, we know the drawbacks of men, like being all silent and stoic and not expressing emotion. And don't we want guys to be, you know, fully expressing themselves?
There are positives and negatives to everything. I'm not trying to vilify them, even though I put on a voice. What I'm just saying is the cliches have changed.
Mm.
In just 30 years,
in a different
context.
Yes, yes.
The biggest snowflake on earth is Donald Trump, right? Like I said, like he's constantly whinging about everything.
But you know what cliche hasn't changed? Telling women to sit down and telling them to shut up.
That's true.
That has never friggin' changed.
That's true.
And this just says to me we have to be completely vigilant about what is going on right now. Mm. In America, there's also an assault on reproductive rights.
Yes.
You know, it's happening on so many different levels, and I'm seeing it so prevalent on social media. I think we need to be incredibly careful about arguments like this, which are basically just casting suspicion on any way in which women can enter a place and will somehow devalue it, somehow make it less effective, when actually we have a ream of studies showing that exactly the opposite is true.
Absolutely. And by the way, when Helen Andrews is blaming women's supposed inherent traits for wokeness, I think she gets completely wrong the effect of wokeness. Like, let me read your quote. Everything you think of as wokeness involves prioritizing the feminine over the masculine, empathy over rationality, safety over risk, cohesion over competition. Now I ask you, is canceling people empathetic, safe, and cohesive? I would say it's the direct opposite. Like, there's no empathy in shunning people and sending them to Coventry.
Mm.
Everyone feels a risk when they feel if they say the wrong thing, they could step on a grenade.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not cohesive for society. Just have a look, like during the cancellation.
But by the same token, you have some people who would, let's say it wasn't cancellation. It was like, mate, 30 women have accused you of sexual assault. Should we have a good think about that? That's actually making things more safe.
Well, yeah,
and
that's
having
true.
Empathy for the victims as well.
That is true. A different kind of safety, but yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, point is she's wrong.
Let's talk about the BBC.
Let's.
Now, we know that they've been under considerable scrutiny of late.
Mm.
There's been a few personnel issues. There's been the handling of sexual assault allegations. There's been discussion of their coverage of Gaza, of the coverage of trans issues. And now we have a Panorama program that has been found to have edited a speech by Donald Trump in a very unfortunate way. Now, let me just read this out. It was... Donald Trump delivered this on January 6, 2021, that day when the Capitol was stormed. And that's why this speech is so crucial and why his role in it. Was he egging people on? Was he egging them on to do what? So this is the edit. We're going to walk down to the Capitol and I'll be there with you and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. And that edit, by the way, was splicing 50 minutes together.
Yeah.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them because we're not going to be taking our country back with weakness. Later, he says, I know that everyone here will soon be walking over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard, which is what his supporters talk about a lot, the fact that he said peacefully and patriotically. That is not what happened that day.
No.
And lives were lost and people were imprisoned and actually have since been pardoned for that by Donald Trump. But we know that as a real rupture in America, that Capitol was stormed and everything was held and there was violence and everything was held for 12 hours, wasn't it? A period of 12 hours and chaos there. Tell me about the significance of this. Donald Trump is now saying he's going to sue for $1 billion, but we have the head of news there has resigned and the head of the BBC, Tim Davey, have resigned.
Mm.
Should they have?
I think, first of all, before we answer that, I mean, look, I think to answer that question, you need to think of the full context of what's going on here, which is while that was terrible piece of journalism in that you just described, like they literally took something from the beginning of his speech and put it after something from the middle of his speech. They reordered it and they completely changed the meaning.
Oh, I thought they'd sliced it. I didn't realize they'd flipped it.
They'd flipped it. Ugh. Like they completely changed the meaning, right? Yeah. So that was really, really bad.
Yeah.
Terrible journalism.
Terrible.
And whoever was responsible for that, I think should be sacked. Yeah. But that's not the head of the BBC. He didn't do that.
Yeah.
He wasn't sitting in some editing suite, right?
Yeah.
So what's going on? What I think is going on here is the BBC is paying the price for being controversial. And this is something that only public broadcasters have to deal with. That it's not about journalist sins. It's about when you are the center of controversy so that people who are against your organization can beat you up.
Mm.
You need to have a head roll in order to keep your funding.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
Yes.
And it's the same at the ABC as well.
Yes, of
they
course.
Are desperate to avoid controversy. I've been there for 25 years. You've been there for just as long.
Yeah, almost. That, yeah,
they don't like controversy. Like, so when you, so if you take.
And we want to get it right.
We want to get it right.
The reputation is really important.
But importantly, even if we do get it right, if we're in the middle of controversy, we don't like it.
Yeah.
Like it's about controversy. That's the issue. I mean, like there's a classic example that happened to the BBC only a week earlier, which was a newsreader was reading out some auto cue, and she said at one point in time about how the weather was really hot and it was affecting pregnant people, women. She said, like, and just it was just a little look. She just opened her eyes just slightly and said, "Women," and nothing happened. It was fine until J.K. Rowling tweeted out about it and said, "This is my new favorite newsreader." All of a sudden, controversy, and then she got censured and she got punished because she wasn't punished for what she did. She was punished for the controversy.
She was
and so
and
that's
they said it was the expression on her face, which they felt showed a political.
It was because they got complaints. It's because they got complaints and because they became a soccer ball getting kicked around by the public.
Right.
This is what the head of the BBC just resigned for.
Mm.
Not because of the editing mistake, but because they became really, really controversial. Mm. The bigger the controversy, the bigger the head has to roll. That's what's just happened. Mm. And that's just the nature of public broadcasting.
Cumulative controversies, you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, and Gaza, there was.
And the size of it. And the size of it. Like, I mean, look at the ABC example of the Antoinette Latouf thing.
Yep.
Like, on its own, that's not a big story. But when it becomes huge, huge, you end up getting managers stepping down. Now, obviously, in the ABC case, no one technically had to resign because of it. But yeah. Anyway, it's the same thing. And just the fact I even mentioned Antoinette Latouf, I promise you, in the control room, they go, no, because the ABC, like the BBC, like any public broadcasting, cannot afford to be controversial.
But that's also then about the competence of management, right? Mm. So when we're talking about the BBC, could they not have dealt with this earlier and better themselves before it became a campaign? Didn't they know about this months ago? Shouldn't there have been recriminations months ago?
Well, you say that, but the only reason we know about it at all is because they had an internal review.
Which was leaked.
It was the BBC the whistle on themselves.
Did they do enough as a consequence of that review?
Look, I mean, I think that they, like I said, I thought that was appalling journalism.
Yeah.
And I think the more they could have done with it, the better. I mean, I'm not saying they were perfect.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that in any other organisation, there wouldn't have been a review in the first place.
Right.
They are paying the penalty for being thorough.
Which is the point. So when you are accountable to the public, there is a cultural war about public broadcasting.
Yes.
And there's constantly a question about is it biased? You get accusations of bias from all sides on all fronts. People are constantly thinking that we're being interfered with actually on a day-to-day. I don't know whether you get that a lot.
I get people thinking that.
But it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
So the question is, or the point is that leaves us more open to interrogation because we interrogate ourselves and because we have to be accountable.
I'd say in this respect, I mean, that is true, but I'd say in this respect, this is not just an ABC or BBC thing. This is a society-wide thing that all the incentives at the moment are wrong. The incentives at the moment are to not apologise and to not own up and to cover up as much as possible, as rapidly as you can, as thoroughly as you can, and then move on.
Right.
Because Every organization makes mistakes, especially media organizations, especially bloggers, et cetera. They just make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
They don't own up to it. They just move on. Who cares?
Yeah.
But at the moment, if you do a proper review and you have any kind of accountability whatsoever, people go, oh, look, there, that's proof that they can't be trusted because look what they found.
Yeah.
And so you have these perverse incentives where the more thorough you are, the more you get beaten up for being unreliable, and the more content you put out and just ignore any standards, the more people you get your clicks and you make your money.
Yeah.
So it's I worry about where we're going in the media generally with those incentives. Because as far as I can see, the incentives are solely just to produce more content, as much content as you possibly can, make as much money as you can, and whatever you do, do not concede or have any accountability whatsoever.
So is this a crisis for journalism?
I think that this BBC story is not a crisis for journalism, but I think it is symptomatic of what is a crisis for journalism. I think there is a reason why journalism is probably more errors now than there used to be. We are required to produce more content than ever with fewer resources than ever. Mm. And that's not just the ABC. That's everyone. That's Channel 9. That's
You're talking
everyone.
About your five-hour podcast.
I'm always, in a way, talking about my five-hour podcast. and the bottom line is, if we don't blow the whistle on ourselves, odds are no one else will.
Yeah.
And then people think you're reliable. Mm. Just don't be accountable. That's not a good incentive. Anyway, time for a gear shift. Jules, what's your pick of the week?
I want to talk about the 50th anniversary of the dismissal.
Yes.
Fascinating commentary around. There's been symposiums. There's been a lot of discussion about could this happen again today? Because obviously, you know, those powers are still in the Constitution. We're still part of the monarchy. We still have a Governor General. I want to encourage people to think as well, because of that time, as we were talking about women earlier on, that was the International Year of the Woman in 1975, and there was a big Women in Politics conference in Canberra at the time. And I went back in preparing for a symposium I was part of on Whitlam. I went back and looked at some of those protests and how, like, the roiling fervour and excitement and anger and obscenity and all those things that were in the women's movement around that time as they all convened. And there was like a protest at the Canberra Times where they all came in and cut wires with nail clippers and demanded that they have an editorial. They were so annoyed with so much of the coverage, which was like saying, how can we spend so much money on the Sheilas? They need to be taught how to do it. They, you know.
It's going to ruin everything.
It's going to ruin everything. They were trying to ruin things. You know, and then they're reporting, oh, there was some event, held for the opening of that. And why did women say that they were like men? Because they said wear a lounge suit, but some of the women still had handbags. Therefore,
got them.
Undermining their whole argument. You know, women were shouting out. Like, it's kind of, I kind of really like the chaos and tumult of that period. And also knowing that so much of that translated into actual reform, which is still benefiting women's lives in terms of funding for women's refuges, measures for single mothers, free tertiary education, which was massively significant, the contraceptive. Mm. And I think it's important at a time when I'm watching a lot of teenagers in my life work out why there's so much talk about clamping down on women's, you know, reproductive rights or right to participate in the public sphere. They were having those debates then, and they were having them in a very loud and outrageous and defiant way. And I think we've got to remember that history and draw on it. So I want to talk about, it's a book called, unsurprisingly, Women and Whitlam Revisiting the Revolution. And it's by Professor Michelle Arrow, a professor of history at Macquarie. And she's just a very funny, sharp historian that's pulled together a group of essays from Elizabeth Reed, who was heading up the women's unit that was then part of the Whitlam's Prime Minister's office. There was also Elizabeth Evatt, the judge, Eva Cox, Tanya Plibersek, and a whole group of women just reflecting on that time and what it meant. And at a time where we have all these weird abstract discussions, you know, are we warriors or warriors or all the rest of it, what really matters is getting concrete things in place to make sure that people have kind of freedoms and protections and opportunities in the same way as other people.
Yeah, I think things have become a lot slicker in the last 50 years, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great one.
Chaz, yes. What about you, and are you wearing your toe socks? Last time you were on, you nominated for the Pick of the Week, the toe socks.
Do you want me to take my shoe off and show you?
Yeah, because they weren't giving you blisters when you were running.
No, yeah, they weren't. You're absolutely right, and they're still not. Okay, yeah, my pick's very similar to yours, actually. Like, you're talking about this book. I'm talking about YouTube Shorts. Very, very similar. there's one YouTube short in particular that one account, which I'm loving at the moment.
Yeah.
It's called Brady Your Tutor. And essentially, it's something that – it's a YouTube short that's been evolving over the last – probably 2 or 3 years. It started off as one of those, there's a lot of YouTube shorts that are around quizzes, usually really simple quizzes, like sort of poor man's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire type quizzes. And this was one of them, but it's evolved over time to become genuinely difficult, and not just genuinely difficult, but to have real geniuses taking part in these quizzes. Like, it is taking up where game shows on TV have left off. I'll give you one example and then I'll talk about it. This example is a guy called Isaac, who's become the celebrity of Brady Your Tutor, trying to guess or trying to pick.
Your tutor? Brader.
Brady Your Tutor.
Brady. Oh, Brady
like a name.
The guy.
Yeah, okay, Brady Your Tutor.
Yep.
And this guy is trying to name all 17 countries that have flags that are only red and white.
Oh my gosh.
Red and white only.
Not dependencies, go.
Canada, Poland, Austria, Tunisia, Turkey, Indonesia, Monaco. Do you have Peru counted?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the coat of arms sometimes makes it all different.
Now, we haven't played you the full 2 minutes because it's 2 minutes, but he gets them all. He's very, very impressive. And the thing about, I think I love about this channel now, and I love about Isaac in particular, and the celebrification of Isaac, is now on the internet, on YouTube, we're fighting not idiots and not people doing stupid stuff.
Very smart
but
people.
Very smart, very quietly spoken, very impressive human
Hang
beings.
Hang on a minute, you're projecting. You're like, these are my people.
Joey, I wish I was like Isaac. Isaac is a lot more impressive than
I
am.
I'm seeing a few Isaac parallels, actually.
I'm loving it. And if you like seeing smart people do smart things, I do recommend that YouTube short. They put stuff out all the time.
Oh, I
like
love
just
that.
Constant content.
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
I might go on there and compete and ruin it. Just like I've ruined this podcast. You ruined a bit too with your empathy.
Yeah, I've got that. Those feminine traits of mine, just ruining things wherever I go.
Yeah, just let's go out and shout a bit. So good to have you on.
Thanks, Jill. Save you.
And our producers are Cinnamon Nippard and Madeline Jenner. And if you've got any feedback for us, look, if... you know, socks included, YouTube shorts and so on. NotStupid is our email address, notstupid@abc.net.au, and I hope to see you again real soon. Always such a pleasure talking to you, Chaz.
Thanks, Jules.